The following podcast contains coarse language, adult themes, and major plot spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Everybody, and welcome back to another installment of Podcasters of Horror, a spin-off of the Super Podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and with me as always is my trusty co-host, the one and only, the terrible Australian, Bede Jermaine. Hello, Bede.
Hello, Marcy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Just all prepared for our very first podcast of 2020, and a lot has happened since we last recorded an episode, which I know you, I think the last thing we did together was the Kingzone episode on the Lawnmower Man.
Yes.
But Matt Kropka and I did an audio commentary for Silent Night, Deadly Night back in December, so we haven't had a podcast since then, but to be fair, we have both been very busy in the past month, so...
Yeah. Pretty much from, like, October to early January, it's usually a really busy time of year because you have, like, Christmas and New Year and always lots of crazy stuff happening. And, I know both of us have been busy with all of that, and I've had health issues, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And I've had family visiting over Christmas and that as well.
Yeah, so. And I've had that as well. So, yeah, we have been busy, but we are here for our first podcast, as you said, of 2020, but also... of the new decade.
Woohoo!
The Super Podcast is now branching into two decades.
I know, because when did you... I mean, you started doing the podcast before I came along. When did you record your very first episode? Was it 2008 or 2009?
I believe it was 2009.
And then I came later on.
Yeah.
So we've been doing this for about over 10 years now.
Yeah, it's been well over 10 years. Well, at least for me. And for you, it's probably been about 10 years. Yeah. So... yeah, Super Podcast now spanning two decades.
I know, right?
And we're only 21. No, I'm kidding.
Well, if it's 2009, we're now 3 decades because we got into one decade.
Well, actually, that's very true. All right, Super Podcast now spanning 3 decades.
And that's a pretty good run because most podcasts will do it for a while and then they sort of drop off it. But we've been doing this for so long. I mean, we're basically like the old veterans of the group out there now.
We are. See, we go from the noughties, the 2010s, now the 2020s.
I know, but another 10 more years of podcasting ahead of us.
Yes, plus hopefully more.
Yes.
So for our 5th episode of Podcasters of Horror, which for... this part, we're talking about Masters of Horror, the TV anthology series from Mick Garris, which aired on
Showtime from 2005 to 2007.
Yeah, so that's what we'll be covering. And once we finish up Masters of Horror, we'll be going into Fear Itself. Mm-hmm. So this spin-off is lasting a little while. We have lots more things to discuss. Before we get into it, as many people probably know, especially if you're listening from in Australia, mm-hmm. Since about September, Australia has been struck by a very bad bushfire season. Mm. Millions of acres or hectares have been burnt. We've lost like a billion animals. Almost 30 people have died these bushfires.
And over 1,000 houses have been destroyed as well.
Yeah, there's many people without homes. So we just wanted to... put it out there that obviously our thoughts are with everyone who's been affected, and both of us have donated to several charities to try help. But as I had the bright idea, because of course I do, I started a little thing called Creators for Bushfire Relief, and you can find that on Facebook. There is a Facebook page, there is a Facebook group, and basically what we're doing is gathering a bunch of creators who are donating their time. So they're going to be providing artwork, books, digital content. We actually have a podcast guest spot up for grabs.
Yep.
And so everything does have a price, but the price or the cost will go to a selected charity. So... yep. So if you go on there, there is a link to the Etsy store. And yep. I believe if you go onto Etsy and you look up Creators for Charity, or you can look up the Super Podcast, you will see listings for some items. So every penny that we get from the sales goes directly to a selected charity, and you get a very cool item. So because we're discussing the podcast, if you want to buy or donate, really,
yep.
to get a guest spot on the Super Podcast, you can find that linked on Creators for Charity Etsy. It is a $15 donation, which we want to send towards the Gippsland Bushfire Appeal. And Gippsland is a section in the state we live in, Victoria, who have been very badly affected by fires. So simply, it's just a $15 donation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go through Etsy, you pay for it, but then we take that money and put it directly to the charity. You get receipts for everything.
Yep.
You can see where it's going. And then you get a downloadable file, which gives you all the information on what you need to do to claim for your guest spot. So
yep.
we have offered that up. There's also some artwork and there's some books, and we'll be running some auctions and everything in the Creators for Bushfire Relief group. So please check all that out. And yep. We do hope we get someone cool who wants to come on and take up the opportunity to guest on the podcast.
Yeah, and not only that, if people who buy, you know, donate to get a spot on the podcast, because we've only got one of them up at the moment.
Yeah.
You also get a choice to pick the topic for the episode as well. So we'll do a dedicated, a whole episode just for that.
Yes, and it'll be with myself and Bede. And you can select the topic within reason. If it's like, you know, you want to review a porno, we might not quite do that. But most everything else we're yes. happy to discuss. It doesn't necessarily have to be on film or television or books. We are happy to discuss a lot of different topics, worldly topics, whichever. So, yeah, so please, listeners, check all that stuff out. If you don't have the money to offer some donations, just share the links around and yep. you'll find them on the podcast post. I'll have all those links there. And with that out of the way,
yep.
we can get started on episode 5. So the two Masters of Horror episodes we'll be discussing are Fairhaired Child, which was directed by William Malone, and Sick Girl, which was directed by Lucky McKee.
Yes, Marcy, the Fairhaired Child.
We have one night. One more night, and the whole nightmare's over.
Anything done out of love is beyond good and evil. We're not evil then, are we, Judith?
I'm hurt. I need help.
Wait, what are you doing?
You're late for your recital.
She's young.
Oh, so are the others.
But the others were boys.
She fits the criteria.
Oh my God! Somebody help us!
Let's get started.
The fires shall burn in you. The dead shall live again. New blood for old.
12 kids to bring you back from the dead. Get out before it wakes up.
Which, as you said before, is directed by William Malone, who is the filmmaker behind the horror films Creature, Fear.com, and probably most notably a lot of people know him for is the 1999 remake of House on Haunted Hill.
Which is actually a pretty decent one.
Yeah, I agree.
Some good creepy moments, and Jeffrey Combs in an interesting role in that movie as well.
Indeed, and it's got an all-star cast as well. But definitely one of my personal favourite horror films from the 90s.
Yeah.
And the film was written by Matt Greenberg.
Who wrote, I think, Halloween H2O?
I think No, that was, I think that was the writer of the next movie, I think. Well, I mean, the next episode we're talking about, but...
No, it says American screenwriter and producer, best known for his work on Halloween H2O, 1408, and Pet Sematary. So I don't know if he wrote those or...
I think he did, yeah.
Actually, screenplay by... yeah, he did work on the screenplay for Halloween H2O, so there you go.
Oh, okay, there we go.
And he did uncredited script revisions on Mimic.
Oh, okay. So he definitely has a bit of horror pedigree behind him.
Yes, and he did the screen story for the latest Pet Sematary, which we've already discussed on The King Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And another Stephen King movie we'll be discussing is 1408.
Exactly.
So there you go.
Also, the episode stars are Laurie Petty, Lindsay Polsipa. I probably butchered her last name, so forgive me. Walter Phelan and William Samples. Yep. And... the plot summary for The Fair-Haired Child, which I'm reading off the Wikipedia page, is as follows. A teenage outcast is kidnapped by a strange couple and locked in a basement with their son, who has a dark secret.
Beware the fair-haired child.
Exactly. You know? And I guess I'll start by saying I really enjoyed this episode. Mm. Like, I really liked it when the first time I watched it when it aired back in 2005. Now having sort of rewatched it again recently, like, I still really enjoy it. It does have a couple little flaws here and there, but which we can talk about. But overall, I think it's a really solid episode, and it's definitely one that perfectly fits the one-hour format of Masters of Horror. Because the last couple of episodes, we always talk about, like, is the story of the episode we're talking about good enough just for a one-hour episode, or could it easily be expanded into a whole feature? But I think with Fair-Haired Child, to me, that is the one-hour length is perfect for a story like this.
Yeah.
And what I really like about it is William Malone gives it a really interesting and unique visual style, and it's very atmospheric and creepy. And he brings a lot of interesting sort of filmmaking techniques to it as well, because there's also flashbacks that are done in black and white, but the way they're kind of shot, they're kind of resentment of like black and white horror films that were shot either in the 50s or 60s. And there's even a bit of German expressionism in there with some aspects of those flashbacks. But also the title creature of the film, The Fair-Haired Child, is actually a really cool and original looking design for a monster. Mm. And also the performances, while some of them are kind of a bit of a mixed bag, but for most part, everyone does their parts well. But for me, I guess... the standout, of course, is Laurie Petty, who is, you know, it's Laurie Petty, and she's always great, and she gives a really great performance here. But it is an episode that, with its story, it talks about some very interesting questions, like how far you're willing to go to bring back someone that you've lost, and is it even worth it, and stuff like that. And, like, there's a lot of interesting questions that the episode brings up, and for most part, I think the film does pretty well at sort of tackling those. Like I said, there are some flaws here and there. Like, some of the acting's a bit shaky, and there is a slight little campiness here and there. But overall, I think it's a really solid episode of Masters of Horror.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's definitely one of the better episodes from the series overall. Like you said, it actually really works well for that sort of hour-ish time frame. You could not really expand this any longer.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't really cut it down too much either.
Hmm.
It is an interesting story, and I think, like you said, it does tackle some interesting themes, especially in regards to loss and grief. And yeah, some of the acting is not the greatest, but it's not really anyone's fault there. But it really is all about Laurie Petty, and she's really, really damn good in this. I think she's such a standout, and I think the film is actually most compelling when it is focused on her character.
Yeah.
Because I think she just brings a lot of presence to the role as well. So, yeah, definitely worth watching, especially if you're a fan of Laurie Petty or haven't seen her in too much.
Yeah, I think at the time when this episode aired, I hadn't seen her in anything in ages. And it was actually a surprise just to see her in this and actually, you know, giving a really strong performance. Because she's definitely someone who brings a lot of weight to her role, even though she is playing a villain.
Yeah.
But you can also, but between her and the character who, I mean, the actor who plays her husband in the film, like, you know, what they're doing is really wrong, because what they're doing basically is that their son died in a drowning accident, which they blame themselves for, because I believe the dad, he can't swim, so he couldn't save their son. So basically, from an old student, which is kind of just something that's thrown in very quickly. It's never really established about that an old student of theirs gives them Bulbulk how they can resurrect their son. But the thing is, the only way they can resurrect their son is that they have to kill 12 kids to bring their son back.
Yeah.
And, like, what they're doing is incredibly evil, but at the same time, you can empathize with what they're saying.
You can understand. You can understand where they're coming from. And, you know, funnily enough, it was the Matt Greenberg worked on the screenplay for the more recent Pet Sematary. They kind of share those similar themes about the loss and grief and what you'd go through to bring back your child, which obviously that's a big theme in Pet Sematary as a theme here. You definitely understand, like, why they're doing it, but it does seem very extreme because they have to make all those sacrifices.
Yeah.
And it does make you ponder whether that's worth it. Like, do you exchange, you know, 12 lives for one?
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. And where this story takes place, I believe the girl is the last sacrifice they needed.
That's the character's name,
Yeah, so it is very interesting. And as she kind of finds out about what's going on, because their son is there. He is the fair-haired child. And we probably should have mentioned spoilers earlier, but obviously, that's a given.
But we always put a spoiler warning at the beginning of every episode. But that's the thing, though. I guess that's kind of my whatever negative criticism I have, because it starts off, you know, trying to have this mystery. Like, you got these two kids, Tara and the young boy, who are like, they're both about 15 years old.
Yeah, you'd say they're mid-teens.
Yeah, mid-teens. And, like, I guess it's meant to be, like, them trying to find out who's this mysterious fair-haired child. Because around the room in the basement where they are, there's, like, hand-scratched-in, like, notes in the walls.
Yeah, it says, beware the fair-haired child.
Beware the fair-haired child. And I guess the episode is trying to kind of make it a mystery, like who it is, but it's pretty easy to figure out that it's actually him.
It's quite predictable that the kid, the other kid there, is the fair-haired child because he turns into a monster.
Yeah,
because the thing that they're doing with the sacrifices hasn't been complete, so he's not fully back to you know, being what he was, which I think is an interesting thing, but it's kind of predictable. But it didn't really affect my enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
Because Oh, no, we didn't watch this one together.
No.
No, we didn't. Sorry.
We watched this one separately, but
yeah, we have watched some together. But I think we might have been texting when we rewatched it. And mostly it was just like, oh, wow, Laurie Petty's so good.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it does have some interesting, a lot of interesting things in it. And yeah, for the most part, it does work.
Yeah.
It is a really solid entry. I think it is one of the better ones. I think there's definitely more pros than cons in terms of everything about it. I do think it's really well directed. It's got a really unique and interesting visual style. The script's really interesting. If not, we already mentioned it is a bit predictable and mostly decent performances. And it's really, really cool to see Laurie Petty in such a different role because if you grow up, like, from the late 80s to the early 90s, you really know her mostly from, like, Point Break or Free Willy, even Tank Girl.
Yeah, but
and something like this is really different.
Or even a League of Their Own as well.
Yeah, a League of Their Own. And this is quite different, so it's really cool to see her. And I definitely think she was one of the more underrated actresses.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, absolutely worth a watch, I think.
Yeah. And I think also that what makes this episode kind of work is that questions whether the parents are doing the right thing, because the character of Tara says at one point during the episode, it's like, you're willing to bring your son back, but you have to kill like 12 other kids to do it. What if those kids had families themselves? Exactly. So it's just basically, is it worth bringing, like you said, bringing one back to kill 12 just to bring one back?
But that also sort of raises the point as well. It's like, if, you know, they've killed these other kids as sacrifices, but what will their parents do in their own grief? So it could unlock a whole lot of different things. But yeah, no, I really like this one. Yeah.
And I like the ending as well, because it's the perfect way to end it. Because Tara does get killed, and basically the son comes back to his full self. But then he decides to make a bit of a deal with sort of the demonic spirit that brought him back to basically bring Tara back. And so what he does is that he offers his parents as the sacrifices, as he says, like, you guys always told me I was good at something, and then I realized what it is. I'm good at bargaining.
Yeah.
Because the parents didn't bargain, like, not making it 12 kids.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right. And the son basically insinuates until he starts talking that he didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the things, like, you know, you did all these horrible things, so it's only fair that I offer you guys up to get killed to bring Tara back.
Yeah, it's actually a really good ending, and it's one you don't necessarily see coming either.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can understand because the two kids actually kind of build up a rapport when they're together.
Yeah.
So you can kind of understand that, and you definitely get why he would offer up his parents, because even though it was for him, he doesn't agree with what they did. Mm. So, yeah, overall, it's pretty solid. What would your rating be?
I give it a solid 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Like, when I first watched it, it was a 4, but this time around watching it, like, some of the flaws kind of stood out a little bit to me. Like I said, some of the acting a bit shaky. I mean, the actress who plays Tara, Lindsay Pulsipher, I probably butchered her last name. I apologize, but... Yeah, I think this time, though, watching her performance, like, her performance did feel a little bit shaky compared to everyone else in the episode. But overall, I think it's a really solid episode that's very stylish. But William Malone is always a very stylish director who always brings a lot of atmosphere and creepiness to his projects. So, and that's on full display here. And it's definitely one of the more cinematic feelings. I mean, more cinematic episodes of the show. So, overall, 3.5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, I'd say my rating's the same. It's definitely a solid 3.5 out of 5. And I pretty much agree with what you've said. I think we feel the same way about this one, so it's always good to agree.
Yes.
Did you have any closing thoughts for this episode?
Oh, no, pretty much that's everything it. Like, it's just a really solid episode. Not an amazing episode, but a really solid, enjoyable one.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to the next episode, which is Sick Girl.
Hello?
Somebody sent me a package above.
Item?
I thought it was a mounted, but it's just too bizarre. Did you hear that? Oh, Max, it's so beautiful.
This is absurd. No insect looks like this.
I'm telling you, that is what it looks like.
Okay, bring it in. Prove it.
It kind of got loose and now we can't find it. You wouldn't want to help me look for him, would you? We would have to be careful. It's kind of aggressive.
Ah! An insect that hunts and kills mammals? Come on, there's no such thing.
I've had complaints. Complaints about your little pets. Seems one of them got loose and now we have a missing dog.
I think Misty got bit. The bug bit you. It's infected you.
You're a monster.
Which was directed by Lucky McKee, which many people probably remember him from May. And it was written by Sean Hood.
And Lucky McKee himself.
Yeah.
And Sean Hood actually, like Matt Greenberg, wrote a Halloween movie because he wrote Halloween Resurrection.
How unfortunate for
him. And also, he also wrote the Conan the Barbarian remake as well with Jason Momoa.
Yeah, interesting little tidbits there. But again, how unfortunate for Halloween Resurrection. and the film stars Angela Bettis, Marsha Bennett, Chandra Berg, Jesse Kulbuck, and Aaron Brown. The synopsis for Sick Girl, a horror comedy in which a lesbian entomologist starts a relationship with another woman, but then also finds herself involved with a rather predatory and aggressive insect. So, if you know what an entomologist is, that is someone who has or study in the scientific study of insects. It's a branch of zoology. Angela Bettis plays the entomologist, Ida, and she's absolutely adorable in this movie.
Indeed.
And she sort of, I guess she meets or comes across a girl called Misty, played by Erin Brown. And both of these women obviously have this, like, natural attraction to each other. They're both very awkward, and it's really adorable, like, watching this little romance unfold. But one day, Ida receives a mysterious package, and it's got some really weird insect.
Yeah, that's never been...
It hasn't been, like, discovered or...
Yeah.
Nothing much is known about. Yeah. So she takes it in, and basically she keeps all their little bugs and stuff, the insects, in her house. But this weird insect ends up biting Misty.
Yep.
And Misty starts to have a bit of a transformation.
Yes.
So it is kind of like The Fly in a way.
Mm.
Like that body horror type of insect thing. Yeah,
it's like if they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
With lesbians.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, this is actually like a really delightful one. I think it's just really adorable. And we did actually rewatch this one together. And this was one I actually did watch when Masters of Horror first came out, being that I was, a fan of Lucky McKee, obviously, because May is one of my favorite movies.
Mm.
And it is actually really cute. The little romance is cute.
Mm.
But then when the horror starts coming in, like, it's disturbing in a way, but it's still got this like funny element to it.
Oh yeah.
So I think it really works. It actually really blends like the horror and comedy and romance really, really well.
Oh yeah.
And I think the performances here are all actually really, really good. I think Angela Bettis, like, she can't really do any wrong.
Oh yeah, she's just as far as I'm like concerned. Like you said, she's absolutely delightful in the episode, and her chemistry with Erin Brown is just spot on. Like, you could see them as a very believable on-screen couple. And yeah, it's just a really fun and funny episode. Like, there's so many funny moments throughout this whole episode. Probably one of my favorite ones is like her and her colleague, who's kind of like a bit of a sexist pig, but they seem like, even though he says a lot of inappropriate things, like Angela Bettis' character doesn't really mind that because it's, you know, they're just talking about girls all the time. Yeah. So, but
although in this day and age of Me Too, you know, he'd be in jail.
Oh yeah, definitely. but what's funny though, because there's, you know, like I said, there's funny moments, but there's one that in particular I find funny, is like they're out at a restaurant having lunch, and then Angela Bettis' character discovers a cockroach in a meal. Instead of both of them being repulsed by it, they're like excited. It's like, oh, what kind of bug is that? But everyone in the restaurant's like freaking out and running out and stuff like that. So there's little funny moments like that. And, but yeah, I mean, it's just it's got a really great script.
Mm.
Like, the tone of it is just pitch perfect.
Mm.
Like, and it's kind of interesting because, like, looking up, you know, the backstory of this episode, Lucky McKee wasn't originally meant to direct this episode. Originally, Roger Corman was supposed to direct the episode. Which is
really interesting.
Yeah, because I think it's because, like, you know, he's done a lot, like, he's famous, a famous horror director. He did a lot of B-movies and all that. So this was probably something that was developed for him. But then, of course, circumstances changed and he couldn't do the episode anymore. So Lucky McKee came in and he rewrote the script. And one of the main things he changed was making Ida and Misty a lesbian couple, because originally Ida was meant to be a male character named Ira, and so they sort of changed, so he just changed the sex of the character. And of course, you know, as we all know, Angela Bettis is like one of Lucky McKee's muses. He loves working with her, and he rewrote the part for her, and you know, she just does such a wonderful job with that character. She's awkward, she's funny, and yeah, she's just a total delight. Like, everyone's a total delight, and even Erin Brown, I think this was her first major acting role, because prior to this she sort of came from more erotic films and stuff like that, and her character Misty, it was her erotic actress name was named Misty Munro, I think it was.
I think it was Misty Munro.
Yeah, so but she's really good as well, and she nails the awkwardness of the character as well. And once she gets infected by the bug, and her whole personality begins to change. She becomes a bit more aggressive and more, you know, sort of kind of evil.
Yeah.
And And it's just really well, she does a really good job with tackling all those different aspects of her character. And it's just really well done. And there's also interesting elements they added to it, like having the homophobic landlord in the house.
Yeah.
And, which is really interesting as well.
It's just that character's really repulsive.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and she gets her come up and yeah, speak with this.
So. Especially because she's got, like, the granddaughter who really likes Ida.
Yeah.
And everything in the landlady's just so mean.
Yeah, I mean, she even says, like, oh, you're basically, like, corrupting yeah. my granddaughter. Even insinuates that, like, she might thinks that she might be predatory to
yeah, which
her
is
granddaughter.
Just wrong.
Yeah, which is absolutely wrong. And hence why it was a good way that her character died.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely was. And so I was just looking up a bit of info on Erin Brown and some of the movies she starred in. Playmate of the Apes and Lord of the G-Strings. So there you go. Some interesting ones there. But she actually works really well in this movie.
Yeah.
And the chemistry between the two actresses is really good. It works for those characters. And as you said, like, even as things morph into, like, a lot of horror, Ida still doesn't give up on Misty either.
Oh, yeah.
And it does sort of have a weirdly sweet conclusion.
Yeah.
But this is, yeah, this for me is definitely one of the big standouts for Masters of Horror through both seasons. It's not the absolute best episode,
yeah,
but it definitely is one of the stronger ones and absolutely highly recommended. Even if you don't want to really watch Masters of Horror, it's one you should watch.
Yeah.
If you have seen it, definitely watch it again. It is so worth a rewatch.
Yeah. This one, I think, and sort of, you know, having seen it a whole bunch of times now, there definitely has a May quality to it because it does have a similar structure to May.
Yeah, it does.
But except, you know, it's not as dark as May. But
yeah, this one's probably a lot more lighter because it is so funny.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, like, it embraces that, the humor, but also embraces those B-movie kind of qualities as well. Like, having, shoot this in black and white and it could easily be those kind of, like,
yeah,
like the original Flyer with Vincent Price or something like that. Just those kind of, you know, movies. Well, even though that wasn't in black and white.
I was gonna
but you
say, that
get,
wasn't quite in black and white.
But maybe. You know what I mean? Like all the other kind of B-movies yeah. from the 50s, B-monster movies from the 50s and all that. But,
yeah.
No, but it's a really fun episode. It's just, and it's interesting seeing Lucky McKee having his own take on it and also kind of, you know, him coming on, doing a rewrite of the script himself and adding more interesting layers.
Yeah, so
it
definitely has his flavor to it.
Yeah. And it gives two really strong performances at the center of it.
Yeah, this is probably, one of my favorites easily. And
yeah, it's definitely up there as one of the best for me
as
well.
It is a really fun one. And, it's actually really interesting watching it now in today's climate, especially with, as we said, that homophobic landlady.
Yeah, and also with, Ida's...
like work colleague.
Even though he is gross, but it's not, but he's, you can definitely see why he and Ida get on really well.
They do have a weird friendship, but then again, you see his character, you look at it through the lens of today and you're like, mate, you'd be in jail. And the landlady, you'd be like, lady, someone's going to bash your head in for saying these things because it's just not right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting in that regard. So
it does have interesting politics in that way.
Yeah. But I mean, a part of me does wonder what this episode probably would have been like if Roger Corman directed it.
I think it still would have, it could have definitely had some comedy elements, but it might have been sort of, I don't know, I almost think it would have been like more in tone of like the original Little Shop Horrors.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it also like, you know, by Lucky McKee changing the couple to be a lesbian couple rather than, you know, just a straight couple.
Yeah.
I think that makes it more interesting of a dynamic. And it's like, not to say it would have been bad if Ida was Ira, like as a man, but I don't know, having sort of a lesbian couple makes it much more interesting. And also like what we talked about before, having sort of the homophobic landlady and stuff like that, you know, kind of the prejudices that they face because the film tackles that as well. So,
and considering this was like, you know, in the mid-2000s,
And also, like,
sorry, my Siri just decided to pick up there.
But also, like, it also, once you sort of find out, like as the episode goes along, that the reason why Ida got the bug was that it was sent by her old teacher,
who happens to be Misty's father,
who doesn't approve of her
and doesn't
being
approve,
a lesbian.
Yeah,
and he knew that he that Misty was in love with Ida, because she was kind of like, I guess, kind of in love for Ida for so long, but she never had the courage to talk about it. So he found out, and as a way to kind of get, you know, Ida out of the picture, he discovers this bug that does crazy things to people.
Yeah, and then he intended that to attack Ida, but instead it attacks his own daughter.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, it has that sort of underlayer of, like, of, you know, like, homophobia as well.
Which is an interesting subject and still very relevant today, because not a lot has changed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And if you can hear little noises, that's just little Freddy.
Yes.
Wanting to be on the podcast. So what would your rating be for this episode?
I give it a solid 4 out of 5. Like, it's a really just fun episode and definitely one of the high points of the first season, for sure.
I'd probably give it 4.5. I'd probably like it a lot more than other people. But yeah, it is one that I've always enjoyed and just seems to get better every time I watch it anyway. So yeah, 4 out of 5. I mean, 4.5 out of 5 from me, easily.
Awesome.
And yeah, that wraps up our little mini episode 5 of Podcasters of Horror. When we return,
for episode, our next one, episode 6,
I believe we'll have Pick Me Up by Larry Cohen and
Heckle's Tale
by John McNaughton, and then the episode after that will bring season 1 to a close and enter season 2, which will be Takeshi Miike's Imprint and The Damned Thing from Tobe Hooper. So you can look for our future episodes.
Yep.
Which will be coming soon.
But also, not only that, we'll have new episodes of our podcast coming up, all of our podcasts at certain points over the next few weeks. So we'll be bringing back The King Zone.
Yes.
And I believe
more King Zone.
And I believe the next one we're doing is the Netflix Stephen King film adaptation. So we'll be talking about, like, Gerald's Game, 1922, and
In the Tall Grass.
And also one after that, we do plan on doing The Shining and Doctor Sleep as well.
Yes, we eventually will get to that one.
Because that was going to be, we would do, I think, late last year, but of course, you know, we got too busy.
Really busy. And
we will have a very special guest for that one, a returning special guest for that one.
And so, it also was getting a bit difficult to try and find 6 hours to watch the TV miniseries again.
Yes.
And I did want to try actually fit in the book. I actually found, I think it was for like a couple of dollars, I found this big book, which includes The Shining, Misery, and
And Carrie.
I think it was Carrie. So it was a pretty cool find.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be good to actually get to reading The Shining and even Misery for those future episodes. Mm-hmm. And we do hope to launch the Ozploit cast, which will be all about the Ozploitation movies.
Yep, from the very beginning till today, like, it will be a deep dive in everything in release order.
Yeah, so it's a big task, but we will make it.
And also the occasional audio commentary here and there. We've got a few films that we've been meaning to do, and some we haven't had a chance to do yet, but we promise we'll get around to them.
We will still get around to them. On the Super Network group on Facebook, we did run some polls for commentaries, and the winners of those to do commentaries was Howard the Duck, which we will still be doing.
Yes, definitely.
And also Night of the Comet and Reanimator. So they are coming. Have faith.
Yes.
And to wrap us up, I'll let you know where you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can find the Super Network at twitter.com/sm_supernetwork. Of course, you can go to Facebook, look up the Super Network for our page and our group. And you can send us an email, if you so wish, at thesupernetworksm@gmail.com. And of course, the website is supermarcy.com. And you can also find the links for creators for bushfire relief as well on the podcast post. And Bede, where can people find you?
Oh, of course, everyone can find all my writings over at supermarcy.com. I've got my latest bad movie tweet-a-thon that's up there at the moment, which was slightly late because, you know, Christmas, I was too busy that I wanted to do this before Christmas, but family was visiting and I didn't have time, which was doing it on the Star Wars holiday special, which
is pretty funny.
It's a pretty funny tweet-a-thon, but it was quite the experience watching that movie, so you could see my read all about my confusion watching that special in that one, and also all my other reviews and writings, and also you can also check out my column Horror Down Under over at the Screamcast. I'm working on a new one now. Again, this one was supposed to come out before Christmas, but got too held up with family and friends, and but it's going to be, and other commitments as well, so that's going to be on a slightly late Christmas edition, which is on Better Watch Out, so that'll come very soon, so keep a lookout for that. And also got some other writings coming in the works as well, so keep a lookout for those too.
And one more thing I forgot to add, with all the charity and bushfire relief, there is also a few people here in Australia are putting together a book. It's called Australia Burns. It'll be an anthology with lots of stories and artwork. It is currently available for pre-order, so you can go to australiaburns.bigcartel.com and you can place your pre-order. I believe they're $20, and all proceeds will go to bushfire relief. And with any luck, I'll also be involved in doing something for them as well.
Oh, awesome.
So I just wanted to make sure all of those things get a shout-out on the podcast.
Sweet.
And I'd like to thank myself for hosting, and Bede for co-hosting, and Freddie for making noise. And please excuse all the ums that we might have in this episode in case they can't be edited out.
Yeah, I'll edit all these ums out, even this part as well. But, oh yeah, I almost forgot. People can also find me at Twitter at twitter.com/BedeJamine.
Yes. All right. So thank you, everyone, and we'll see you soon.
See you, everyone. Bye.